We're taking you behind the scenes with entrepreneurs that run product-based businesses, people that were once in your shoes. Our TSBC alumni, speakers, and friends will shed light on growth strategies, resources, and inspiration to help you scale your creative business. Before we get started, I wanted to give you an update on our coaching opportunities. If you need help in your business, whether it's growing your product line, getting ready for wholesaler shows, or maybe you want some help on the operations side, hiring a team, refining your systems, looking at your finances, we have experts and mentors available to help you. So I personally take on a very limited number of new coaching clients each month, and I have one spot left for September and two for October. So if you are interested in working with me or one of our other bootcamp speakers that offers coaching, head on over to tradeshowcamp.com/coaching and let me know what your current struggles are so that we can get you paired with the right person. You don't have to go it alone. We have people and resources here to help you. So again, go to tradeshowcamp.com/coaching for more information. Hey friends, I'm Katie Hunt, the founder of Trade Show Bootcamp, and welcome to Proof to Product. On today's episode, I'm talking with Johnny and Joanna, the husband and wife co-founders of Letterfolk. Letterfolk is a contemporary American brand whose mission is to create meaningful products that are inspired by simpler times. Letterfolk started in June 2015 while the couple searched for a unique way to capture their daughter's monthly baby milestone photos. They designed a modern, versatile letterboard that was tailored and repurposed for today's home. I'm sure you've seen their letterboards all across social media. They are now a staple of social media, art direction, home decor, and milestone photography. As Letterfolk has grown, so has the brand vision and their product offerings. And Letterfolk products are proudly made in the United States with premium materials, craftsmanship, and processes. On today's episode, we're talking about how Johnny and Joanna reinvented the letterboard market, their thoughts on copycats, and how they leverage social media to nurture their customers and share their company story.
Hey, Joanna. Hey, Johnny. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Hey there. Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
It's my pleasure. So first things first, what is the most unique and interesting way that you've ever seen a letterboard used?
Ooh, that's a great question.
There are some pretty amazing use cases.
So we have a series, as far as like the most crazy and unique, we've seen some really amazing stuff with just using the letters to create really neat,
artwork.
Uh-huh. But we also have a really cool series called Folks of Letterfolk, which is sort of our version of Humans of New York, if you're familiar with that.
Yeah.
But anyways, in it, we just share these really incredible stories of people who have used our letterboards to either announce really incredible milestones like last chemotherapy session, or, hey, we just adopted this kid into our family. We just eloped. Anyway, and it's an incredible, it's so humbling to see our product involved in these just life-changing moments. So I think, you know, the artistic answer is that people have done some truly amazing things, but the thing that touches our heart more than anything is seeing where our boards are used in some of these important moments in people's lives.
Oh, I love that. I agree. It's been really fun for me to just surf Instagram. And I know we're going to talk about that a little bit more later, but it's been fun for me to surf Instagram and see your guys' stuff everywhere and just how people are leveraging it for important milestones in their lives or things that are going on. My daughter used one of the boards we have of yours for her Girl Scout cookie sales.
Oh,
and
she
laid out all the cookie types and the prices. It was really cute. Yeah, you guys are in our life forever.
That's awesome.
Okay, so how did you come up with the idea for Letterfolk?
So we were actually living in New York City, and our second daughter had just been born, and we were talking one night trying to figure out a creative way to start documenting her monthly milestones, like a creative way to do photos. And Johnny mentioned his the letterboards that we used to see, like in class photos, like class of 1992 or whatever. And Johnny actually has a bunch of photos from when he was like on a baseball team.
Little League, like, you know, and the photographer would quickly change out the team name, and it was really good for what it was needed for.
And he's like, it'd be so neat to find one and use it in Winnie, our daughter's name, in Winnie's photos. And so we started searching for letterboards, and we realized they were nowhere to be found. They weren't being made anymore. And we were able to find, like, I think one, like, industrial, like, type of company where we could order one. Or maybe we found an old one, I think. But we got our hands on one, and we started using them in her photos. And we were like, this is so neat. And we'd love to redesign this and make it a little bit different where it would, you know, actually be the right dimensions for a photo of. So we were able to find a company that made these like industrial use letterboards, and
but they had all the equipment necessary to build these letterboards still. And they were really the only manufacturer in the US that was still making them. I spent probably a month every day during lunch calling every manufacturer that I could find on Google who had ever made a letterboard. And they just all let us know that, you know, either we stopped doing this 10 years ago or the guy who used to service our machine died 20 years ago.
Yeah, we realized like, okay, no one is making these. So we worked with them and we were able to kind of work with them to design them the way that we would like them for a photo. And then we decided, we also thought it'd be really neat to have one even on our wall in our home. And so we worked with them on creating a design for that as well. And we got like samples of it and we just were like, wow, this is so neat. And we even put one up on a wall in our apartment in New York City. And we would kind of wait to see if like when our friends came over, they would say anything and we would get lots of questions about it. People would be like, I love that print. And we would tell them, it's not a print. It's actually a letterboard.
You can change out the quote right now.
Yeah. And we were just like, this is really neat. And we wanted to move forward with it, but living in New York City, we didn't know how we would do it with just financially. And we were in this tiny apartment. So we decided to kind of take a leap of faith. And we moved to Salt Lake City and we rented a house that had a basement and a garage so that we could have product delivered there. And we used money that we've been saving for a down payment, which I think it was like our first purchase order was like $20,000. And we just moved out there. And a month after we moved there, all of the product arrived. And then once we had this product in our garage, we were like, okay, we've got to build a website. We've got to start, you know, figuring out how we would package like these boards. They're kind of hard to ship. And
I remember looking at all the pallets in our garage and both of us saying like,
what have
we made
done?
A huge yeah. mistake.
what are we doing right now? Yeah. We were both feeling kind of like icky about the whole situation because like some time had passed and we were questioning our original instinct.
Well, and it was the rubber met the road and we had sort of told some family and friends, like, I was consulting and doing some freelance work. So it wasn't like we'd completely cut ties to a paycheck or anything, but we told some family members more the idea, like, hey, we think we're going to sell these things. And, you know, the response was kind of like a supportive family member, just a lukewarm, like, oh, well, that's neat. That I hope that works out. There just wasn't any real validation.
I mentioned it to one friend and it wasn't a very good response. And I just thought like, okay, I'm not telling anyone else about this.
Oh my gosh. I was just having a conversation. We were at a family reunion last week and I had two cousins that were like, wait, so what do you do again? What is this podcast thing? And what do you coach? And so I totally understand. I felt that way too when I had my stationery line. But I want to back up a minute here. You went from looking for a product that you wanted and needed in your personal life to then searching for manufacturers like everywhere to see how you could produce this thing or find it or whatever. But when you were looking for these manufacturers, you weren't doing it with the intent to just find one for yourself. Like at that point, you must have known or had that light bulb moment that you wanted to create a business out of this. Is that true?
Yeah. No, yeah, I definitely think so. I think I even remember having the talk one night with Johnny on the couch where we were like, is this like a neat enough idea that we should start selling it to other people too? Because we were both like, we thought it was the neatest thing. And we were both super excited about this idea. And we kind of just like made the decision one night that let's move forward with this as like kind of a side passion project thing where we just, I don't know.
And we did a lot of
our toes in.
We're both pretty conservative. So, I mean, that whole story probably makes it sound like we're crazy, but we are extremely conservative. And the approach I took was I said, okay, I'm just going to look on eBay and see if anyone's selling like used letterboards. At the very least, can we liquidate, if this all just goes to pot, can we liquidate all of these boards over the next 10 years on eBay and make our money back? And I felt pretty confident that we could do that. So it was like, you know, if this doesn't pan out, it's going to hurt for a little bit. It's not going to ruin us financially. We had some other savings, but we'd also, we both kind of have an entrepreneurial bone in our body. Not that we've done a whole lot of other stuff prior to this, but I think we kind of had all that savings put away waiting for a moment. And so we weren't, to answer, one way to answer your question is we weren't necessarily looking for, you know, we weren't looking at the baby milestone market and thinking like, oh, this is a $1 million business. Let's get in this industry. It was more, hey, this is kind of cool. Hey, this is really cool. Let's try it on a wall. And it just snowballed from there. So
yeah. Well, and it was clear that there was a hole in the market because nobody else was making them at the time. Yeah. So, okay. So which version of your letterboards were stacked on those pallets in your garage? Did you start with just one format, or did you have many formats at the beginning?
Okay. So yeah, did we have two or three sizes?
We had three sizes. Okay,
so we had our 10 by 10,
our poet,
our 16 by 20 writer, and then the 24 by 30 wordsmith. So we kind of knew those were like going to be our staple sizes. And then we had black felt with the metal aluminum frame, and we had the gray felt with the wood frame. Those were our very first.
Those are what you started with.
Yep.
Okay. And how soon after launching did you branch out into other accessories and other product categories?
I mean, I don't think we actually released a new letterboard even for probably the first 4 to 6. I mean, it was probably like 6 or 8 months after that we launched our black felt with wood line, which is our oak line. And then maybe a year later, we launched our white line. And to be honest, we were so in over our heads in the beginning with trying to keep up with demand that there was just no time for product development. So, you know, the picking a new felt with a frame, and our options were pretty limited with our manufacturer, but that was about the best we could do for at least a year, probably a year and a half even.
Yeah.
Which is a great, you know, it's a great problem to have. But at the same time, it felt like we had all these other things that we wanted to explore. But just to keep up with the day-to-day of our existing business, we really couldn't do much else.
In some ways, it was almost a blessing that you couldn't expand so much, because it forced you to figure out what your market was, get your sales process down. I don't know. I'm just thinking. There's sometimes where we try to do too much, and then that distracts from just the foundation that we need to be building.
Yeah, no, definitely. In that time, we were able to sort of figure out our core product line, but also
build
who we were
brand,
talking to. Yeah, you know, establishing our voice, establishing our community. So as much as maybe our product development wasn't as robust as we wanted to be at that time, we don't look back and regret that at all. It was definitely the time to be focused on really solidifying the core business and then going from there.
Absolutely. So you guys came through our Paper Camp e-course. Oh gosh, it was a year or two ago now?
It would have probably been a year ago. Maybe 8 months ago, 6 months ago.
Yeah,
anyway.
It was recent.
Yeah.
But at that point, was that when you started wholesaling, or had you been wholesaling prior to coming to Paper Camp?
We had done some very sporadic wholesaling. So we had been approached really early by a couple big names in the big box industry that we would want to be associated with. It was probably within the first 6 to 12 months, which we were floored by. And then we got the term sheet and realized this will never happen. Like never. For a few reasons. One, we just couldn't produce enough. We, you know, these are handcrafted in the United States. Our manufacturer is here, and it's a very laborious process. These are really complicated products. Each felt board, the felt is about 2.5 times the height of the board. And then it's literally hand rolled. Every single line is hand rolled with like basically a pizza roller or a pizza cutter into the board. So it takes a long time to build them. And then also the costs of building them in the US really just made it so that it wasn't feasible to work on those terms. And so we worked with a few vendors that were willing to work with us on, you know, terms that we could wholesale at that weren't necessarily traditional rates, but worked for both of us.
Right.
And so we probably, you know, we've only had about 20 smaller boutiques that we work with that we've wholesaled with. But since we've gotten into doing some paper and some new product lines that finally we can offer wholesale pricing, that's when we took your course.
I like that you mentioned it wasn't conducive to wholesale this because of, well, a variety of things. But I've been talking to a lot of coaching clients lately and telling them, if your margins don't work, if your pricing doesn't work, you don't have to sell everything that you offer, everything you create, to both the wholesale and the retail market. If it doesn't make sense for the wholesale side of your business, you don't have to sell it there. You can just continue to sell it direct to consumers. So it's great to hear you reiterate that and to talk about your own experience of perhaps turning down some opportunities because they weren't a right fit. They weren't the best decision for your company to go that route.
Totally. And I also think at the time we were going back to just figuring out our core business. We were finding out so much stuff selling directly to customers that we didn't want to get sucked into the trap of going high volume and going all in on wholesale and losing that interaction with our customers. First of all, the margins are great, but also we learn a lot. Yeah. You know, we felt like we would have missed out on a lot of learning opportunities had we approached wholesale quicker.
Yeah. Well, to your point about community, I mean, letter boards now are such a staple in social media, art direction, home decor, to your point earlier, milestones. How are you continuing to nurture this strong community of customers online or, you know, just through your engagement over email and things? I know you do a lot of like regramming on Instagram and sharing other people's images. What else are you doing to help fuel and continue to build that community around your products?
I think one of the most important things, and this is going to backtrack to just where we started, but establishing a voice for us was probably the most important thing that we spent time on. And we decided very early. So I'm a copywriter by trade and in advertising, and Joanna is a copy editor. So words, like, this literally couldn't be a better product for us. Words are our business. And so we spent a lot of time focused on that, just given our backgrounds, but we decided that we wanted all of our posts to feel like conversations. Like we were just injecting ourselves into an existing conversation that was happening between friends on Instagram. And it would be really easy to tag a friend and sort of say, hey, this is what we were talking about last night, or hey, you remember this? And as that snowballed, it sort of turned into something interesting where the boards that we would post that we would make ourselves, that voice was being sort of mimicked by a lot of our customers. And so for one, it was great because it was free marketing, but two, it was great because it gave us content to repost that was also in line with our voice. And so that, more than anything, I think has been the biggest driver and fostering driver of our community, is just regramming and showing more customers other customer boards.
Yeah. And I think we try to keep our account pretty personal. Like, even though it's grown to the size that it's at now, it's still, we want it to feel like kind of this tight knit community and a place where people know what to expect from us, and a positive and uplifting account. Even like with the funny things we post, we try to always keep it pretty uplifting. And then Johnny and I have tried to insert ourselves as part of the brand as well, just, you know, so that people remember that it's, you know, it's a human brand. It's a brand that there are people who actually care who are behind it.
We also make it a point to, you know, do our best to like and comment on most photos that tag us and mention us. You know, I feel like if someone's taking the time to promote and it might not be promote in their mind, but to include your product in their photo, the least we can do as a brand, I don't care if we have 5 million followers, the least we can do as a brand is say, this looks awesome, thank you so much. And we mean that. We, you know, even though the number of photos has increased since day one, every photo still means the world to us, that they would think to A, purchase the product, but B, share it. And so communicating that in a way that shows that we are a small business has been really important.
Yeah, I do think that is a struggle, that as a small business becomes a bit larger, or appearance from the outside is that it's become larger, whether it's people looking at your social media following numbers, or just they make assumptions that you're a bigger brand.
Sure.
If they see your products everywhere. And yet at the same time, many of these brands, including many in our alumni community for Trisha Bootcamp, we're still just like small shops with maybe, you know, it's either one or two people running the show or a small team behind them helping. And so I like that you interject yourselves into your branding and your marketing, because I do think it's important to show the face behind the brand and let people into what your story is. And you guys do a very good job of that. So kudos to you.
Thanks. We appreciate that.
Not to change to like a slightly negative topic, but it must be frustrating when you see copycats producing similar products on the market and popping up on the market. And I assume this is kind of, from my point of view, from outside, it feels like this has been a transition where there, you guys were the only ones doing, you know, letterboards for a while, and then there's been an influx in people doing them. Does this bother you? How do you feel now versus how did you feel at the beginning when people started popping up with copycat products?
Yeah, I think initially it was very personal for us only because it was a product category we had created from scratch, including just the dimensions of the boards themselves, like every aspect of the board.
The packaging, like every, and that's what's more frustrating than anything else. You can throw all the money that we've maybe lost to copycats, et cetera. It's just the integrity of how much time we put into choosing every aspect of the packaging and the board dimensions and the materials. And to just see it ripped off so easily without any even thought to think like, maybe I should do it differently, or why should I do it this way just because they did it? And from everything we've seen, no one has taken any opportunity to elevate the product category. And so that more than anything was probably the most personal.
They were taking it and copying it, but also cheapening it, which was hard to see. And I think initially it would kind of just feel like a punch in the gut. Then we started getting, I feel like, over it a little bit. And we'd have family members or friends who would be getting angry about it and send us texts. Like I started getting texts like almost every day of people like being angry on our behalf. And then I think we got to a point where it actually started to become a problem where we were like, you know, this is actually affecting our brand and us and our ability to, you know, feel like we're still the main people in this
product category.
Mm-hmm. So then it started kind of motivating us and making us, you know, just want to kind of put blinders on and still move forward as a brand and figure out how we were going to become a lasting brand. So in the end, I think it has ended up being a good thing. And I feel like it's forced us to kind of stretch and learn and figure out how we're going to, you know, I think letterboards might be a trend and how we as a brand aren't going to be a trend, but we're going to be, you know, a lasting brand.
More than just a letterboard company. And I, you know, it's still personal. Like, I think we still feel like it brings up raw emotions, but we know how to suppress them now. And, you know, a positive way to look at it is how neat that we were able to create a product category, you know, albeit a niche product category, but how cool to look at all of these letterboards that are all over Instagram and television commercials, and how cool is that? And try to, you know, pat ourselves on the back, but realize we've got to move forward and we've got to build a brand that's bigger than letterboards and prove that we're more than a one-hit wonder.
I feel like there's two sides of the process, and I don't know what the right way to phrase this, but like when you see this kind of thing happen, there's the mental challenges and there's the logistical challenges to your business, right? Like, this is a very personal product for you guys. It's a personal brand. So you do feel the punch in the gut. But at the same time, I hope that you do feel confident in knowing that no one else produces the same quality or care that you do into your products. And so I'm not trying to belittle the devastation that comes with this kind of stuff, but I do think it's that mental battle of feeling awful about it, but then flipping the switch a little bit to say, you know what, we're putting our best work into this and nobody else can replicate that.
That has been a huge thing for us, is realizing that we will always put more time and effort and care into creating the, you know, a product that's actually lasting. And like, you can buy one of our boards and it'll last you from the time your baby's born until they graduate from high school. You know, you can use that same board in every photo, and we feel confident in that. And that has been like a huge just bolster for us, like realizing that can't be copied, that aspect of our business.
We went to Target last week, and I know that Target's been selling a knockoff board for probably a year or so. And I've intentionally avoided the cheapo craft section, but I right. sought it out this time. And it was really nice because I realized like it's literally a plastic board. It's not felt, it's not wood, it's plastic. So the $19 price point that it's sold at reflects. But it was nice to finally see it in person and realize like, you know what, this isn't even on the same, it's just, it's a completely different world. And, you know, more to the point though, moving forward, we know that even though like we come out with a new size, give these copycat companies 3 to 6 months, they come out with the same size. But what's in our head cannot be copied. And so we try to focus on these new product categories, even if it is in the letterboard world, and know that we will at least be two steps ahead of anyone who's trying to copy us. And it's given us pretty thick skin and this mentality that we should just expect that everything's going to be ripped off. So how are we going to make it X times better from the outset so that when the knockoffs do come knocking, we'll already have a product differentiation right from the outset.
Absolutely. So this kind of leads into my next question then. How has your vision for the brand changed as the company has grown? And it sounds to me too like some of this copycat stuff has lended itself to you expanding into other categories and perhaps the vision changing a bit. Do you want to speak to that?
I mean, I think that our mission is still the same, and that's kind of what we've tried to focus on. And like, how do we take our mission, our initial mission with these letterboards, which is, you know, a meaningful product that's going to, you know, uplift you and going to put you back in the tangible world and away from the digital world, and taking that and incorporating it into other products. So that's kind of been our focus, is keeping our mission the same, but just broadening our product categories.
So, yeah, I think, yeah, like Joanna said, I think even before the copycats came, we knew we wanted this to be more than letterboards. And so, thankfully, we had started that process well in advance, so it didn't feel like it was a rush pivot to find something else that we could move our brand into. It was very deliberate. We spent a lot of time designing and thinking about the new product categories that we wanted to be in. So our first product was Abridged, which is a journal that's a guided journal, and it was something we were really passionate about, and it felt very on brand. Once again, you know, capturing meaningful moments. It's, you know, as great as our phones are, there's still so many things that need to be tangible and are worth holding on to. So from our journals, we moved into notebooks and planners. And every single product, we look at it as an opportunity to sort of, you know, shake up that product category. So it's easy enough to just, you know, put a nice design on a notebook, and that's great. And I think that's a way for a lot of other people to create their own voice in a product category. For us, since we're not artists, we try to put more effort into what's inside the book and how is this going to make your life better or easier or more meaningful. And so as that sort of developed, just sort of naturally, we found ourselves rolling into new product categories every quarter or two.
Yeah, it's really great and fun for me to hear you talk about how you don't want to just create something else that's on the market with a different design, but you really want to enhance and expand upon it. And I noticed you talked about that too when you were talking about the copycats, that they weren't even expanding upon your product. And I like how your mind thinks about how can we make this better? How can we improve upon what's already out there? How can we stay true to our mission and our values and create products that reflect that? So it's been really fun to watch you guys with your growth and your transitions. You've been really smart about the product categories you've gone into, and just, I don't know, kudos to you. It's been a lot of fun watching from the sidelines.
Well, thanks.
We're definitely still learning. I feel like that's something that's never going to stop, is us figuring things out and continuing to learn.
Totally. Entrepreneurship, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So what advice would you give to others that are thinking about starting a product-based business?
So when not that very many people ask me, I probably answer it like twice a year, but it's like I go back to not quitting your day job. So for us, I didn't quit my day job. I don't know that it's the right, there will always be the exceptions to the rule. So I don't want to just, you know, put this out as a blanket statement, but my theory is, so first of all, I think you operate much better. I think you operate without such rash decision-making when you don't have to count on it to be your bread and butter income, first of all. Second of all, if I think it's a good test to say, I have a work day from 9 to 5, or I take care of the kids from 9 to 5, or whatever those hours might be, And I think it's a good test to say, if I'm passionate about this, if I'm passionate enough about this product or this idea, then I will put in the hours when I don't have them. Or so when I'm not working to pursue this idea. And if you don't, then I don't think you're passionate enough about it. And you probably shouldn't quit your day job and just go full speed into the world of entrepreneurship. So that's sort of my answer, is I think that it's a natural way to sort of weed out whether or not you really feel passionate enough to work from, you know, your day job from 9 to 5 and then work your side gig and your passion project from 5 to midnight. And if all you can think about at work is this other idea, and during your lunch you're researching things, then that's a great start. And just keep going until you have enough cushion to make that transition out into doing this full time.
Yeah, I think it's easy to romanticize the idea of starting a small business. And it's a good gut check if you're working and you're working on it, and then you're working on your side hustle after hours, then you know that you're passionate about the idea and you're not just passionate about the idea of starting a business.
Oh, that's great. I love that. I agree with you guys. I overlapped with a day job and my businesses for a good 4 years.
Yeah.
And at the time, I wanted to pull my hair out.
No,
I was so exhausted. But at the same time, in retrospect, and you know, retrospect is always 2020, yeah, I can point to that time and say, you know what, that afforded me a lot of opportunities to grow my business, because I knew my family was taken care of financially. I knew that I could reinvest the money I was making in the business back into the business to do things like trade shows or upgrade my website or whatever the thing, you know, invest in more product development. And if that was my sole income, I wouldn't have been able to do all those things that I had done, because I wouldn't have been as likely to take those risks, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think, and again, I just think you operate a lot differently when it's not make or break. I think you make the decisions you want to make, as opposed to making the decisions you're forced to make when it becomes a necessity.
Absolutely. I agree. So what's next for you guys in Litterfolk?
So we were probably just 2 weeks out. So we launched our passport collection about a month and a half ago, and that's been such a fun project and fun product line. They're small experience journals, all centered around different activities like hiking, national parks, golfing, reading books. And again, it's another tangible way to record those meaningful moments in life when you're doing these things. And they're also a really great motivation when you have a blank book in front of you and you have, so we have one for tacos. Go visit 20 new taco stands and record, you know, what you think of each one. And so that product line has been super fun for us. And then we're also coming out with some greeting cards in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, and they kind of fit in with our same theme of like kind of expanding the norm, like the normal.
They'll be, I think it'll reflect on what Litterfolk is as a business, but we could obviously put a lot of our funny quotes on the front of a card, and I think that might work, but we just felt like that was a cheap extension right now of sort of what we do on Instagram. And so when those come out, I think they'll be really
experiential in their own way as well.
Yeah, personalized and experiential. Yeah.
Very cool.
And then we have a few other like product lines that we're working on. But right now we're just trying to expand our brand and our product offering. And I think we're going to maybe get more into wholesale in the future.
We're going to New York now next month, which will be our first trade show. You know, we are grateful for your course and still feel like we're going in completely unaware of what we're about to face, but we feel much better knowing what we do know now, which is awesome. But that will be exciting too. So
you guys will be great. I can't wait to see how it all goes and hear more about it too. So, well, where can people find you online if they want to follow you on Instagram or purchase your boards? What's your website and your social handles?
So we're letterfolk.com, and then on Instagram we're at letterfolk.
Excellent. We'll include that in the show notes. Thank you guys so much for coming on and telling your story and sharing some of the background behind the scenes of how you've built this business and how you continue to pivot as you go. It's just been a lot of fun.
Awesome. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks.
Hey friends, are you preparing for trade show season and having a tough time dealing with all the details? Well, I have a new free on-demand workshop that will help you maximize your trade show investment and keep wholesale orders coming in long after your trade show ends. If you're interested in joining me for this free masterclass, head on over to theboothblueprint.com to sign up. Again, that's theboothblueprint.com. I look forward to having you. Proof to Product is brought to you by Trade Show Bootcamp and hosted by me, Katie Hunt. Since 2011, TSBC has worked with hundreds of product-based businesses to help them uplevel, scale, and build profitable, sustainable companies. You can find our show notes and additional resources at prooftoproduct.com. And if you like what you heard today, please head over to Apple Podcasts to leave a 5-star review and subscribe. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week with a new episode.